This is James Coover with K-State Research and Extension with your Extension Crop Report. We are quickly coming upon the soybean growth stage where nutrient deficiency symptoms become more apparent. What often looks like a disease is really a physiological problem, usually caused by a nutrient deficiency. The recent weather we've had hasn't been great either. Field flooding rains will actually make the soybeans more susceptible to drought later on, and nutrient deficiency symptoms are more likely. Phosphorus deficiency can be an issue, but potassium problems are more likely. Potassium plays an important role in plants. Potassium is part of many enzymes and processes, and one process is the opening and closing of the leaf stomata, which is the cell structure on the leaf that allows water to transpire. During drought, potassium is pumped out of the stomate cells, closing the leaf pores so less water is transpired and the plant wilts to protect itself during dry weather. Potassium moves into the plant roots by water solution, so potassium deficiency effect is compounded. Potassium deficiency causes yellowing on leaf edges and can eventually die back and will occur first on the older leaves. The time that I've seen potassium issues in the field, besides the dry weather, it is usually associated with very high or very low pH soils. Around here, high pH soil can occur in a strip along the north side of a gravel road. Farmers often think that it's disease or herbicide drift creeping into the field, but often it's potassium or iron deficiency. The flood drought cycle will make nitrogen and sulfur deficiency more likely as well. The nitrogen deficiency is more likely because rhizobium fixation is difficult when the roots are stressed. This will be more of an issue in double-cropped beans. Nitrogen deficiency will cause yellowing of older leaves, but plants can be carefully dug, not pulled, and inspected for healthy, internally pink or white soybean root nodules. Acidic soils will amplify the problems of poor root nodules. Sulfur will be a bigger issue simply because sulfur is a mobile nutrient that can be leached from the soil, and most of it comes from organic matter turnover. Young beans are more likely to have sulfur deficiency but can recover later on once the roots expand and soils recover. To put it together, the weather we've had this year makes soybean nutrient problems more likely. This will be amplified in acidic soils or commonly waterlogged soils. Potassium, phosphorus, nitrogen, and sulfur will be the most likely to be observed. The micronutrients of molybdenum and boron can be a problem in eastern Kansas, but are less likely. Nutrient problems are identified in three ways: by looking at plant symptoms, taking a soil test, and by taking a leaf tissue sample. Tissue samples are taken at the top trifoliate leaf of at least 30 plants during flowering, and in the long season beans, we are coming up on that time frame. If you suspect nutrient issues in your field, please give me a call. The number is 620-724-8233. This has been James Coover with your Extension Crop Report. Next up, we'll have Wendy Powell, Livestock Production Agent for the Wildcat District.
Hi, this is Wendy Powell, your Livestock Production Agent with the Wildcat Extension District. A clean stock tank with high-quality water promotes healthy livestock. Nursing calves have a 9% higher weight gain when drinking water from a trough rather than from a pond. Poor tasting water can influence forage intake. Drinking more water can mean more efficient forage consumption. Viruses, parasites, and bacteria thrive in tanks that are not properly cleaned. Keeping your stock tank clean can be a challenge in the summer. Warm summer temperatures, abundant sunlight, and nutrients mix together to create ideal conditions for algae growth. Algae changes the taste of water, and some types are even toxic. Nutrients from slobber, urine, feces, leaves, or other debris can stimulate harmful algae growth, like blue-green algae, which is toxic to all classes of livestock. Using fencing or other barriers to limit livestock access to ponds can mitigate nutrient introduction. Barriers should be low enough that critters won't slip underneath them. Most tanks should be drained and cleaned once or twice a year. Spring is a good time for a good scrubbing before temperatures skyrocket. Add 1 part household chlorine bleach for 32 parts of water. Let the water sit for 15 minutes, drain, and scrub the tank well. Keep livestock away from the tank for at least 30 minutes after cleaning. Getting the tank empty can be difficult unless the tank has a built-in drain, In the case of no drain, turn the water off and let the livestock drink the water down to a point where it can be managed. Once the tank is cleaned, there are a few ways to keep it clean. First, keep debris like leaves or dead plants out of the tank. 2 ounces of household chlorine bleach to 50 gallons of water weekly will help regulate algae growth. Or copper sulfate, 1/8 teaspoon per 100 gallons. Goldfish are also an option for algae control. Add 4 to 6 goldfish per 100 gallons of tank capacity. Goldfish survive best when the temperature is at least 60 degrees. They need bricks, rocks, or some structure to hide from predators like birds or raccoons. Fish kills are a concern if the water level gets too low and there's not enough oxygen, or in the winter when it's too cold. Keeping troughs out of direct sunlight can also help minimize algae growth. Freeze-proof troughs, such as the floating ball top waterers, work well in cold weather and work to keep water cool in the summer. Your water quality can be tested at a lab. At K-State Soil Testing Lab, we can see nitrates, pH, and total dissolved solids, and make sure everything's within recommendations. If water is suspected of causing a health problem, contact your vet. For more information, give me a call at the Labette County Extension Office, 620-784-5337.
Thanks, Wendy. And now, here's Davin Skrantz, Natural Resource and Diversified Ag Agent, with her report.
This is Davin Skrantz, one of the Agriculture and Natural Resource Agents from the K-State Research and Extension Wildcat District of Crawford, Labette, Montgomery, and Wilson Counties, with your K-State Research and Extension report. Habitat is a combination of food, water, shelter, and space arranged to meet the needs of wildlife. Even a small yard can be landscaped to attract birds, butterflies, beneficial insects, and small animals. Trees, shrubs, and other plants provide shelter and food for wildlife. The plants you use for food and cover will help determine the wildlife species attracted to your backyard. Nesting boxes, feeders, and watering sites can be added to improve the habitat. Planning is necessary for attractive and productive wildlife habitat. You have both a horizontal area to work with, the size of your backyard, as well as a vertical area that stretches from the soil to the treetops. The vertical area is composed of the canopy formed by the tallest tree branches, understory vegetation consisting of smaller trees, shrubs, and vines, the floor, which is often dominated by low-growing ground covers, and the basement, where a variety of organisms exist in the soil. Different wildlife species live in each of these zones, so numerous habitats can be provided on a small piece of land. Trees and shrubs are the backbone of any landscaping design and are important for wildlife shelter. Many trees and shrub species are excellent sources of food for wildlife. Proper selection of plant material can meet both the aesthetic needs of the homeowner and the food and shelter requirements of wildlife. Clean, fresh water is as important to birds, bats, butterflies, and other wildlife as it is for people. Water in a saucer, bird bath, or backyard pond is adequate for wildlife. Be sure to change the water every few days to keep it fresh. In hot weather, it may be necessary to refill the container daily. Logs, rocks, and water-holding structures provide drinking and basking habitat for turtles, butterflies, and songbirds. Stones with depressions that collect water will help attract butterflies. Squirrels, chipmunks, rabbits, raccoons, opossums, skunks, woodchucks, mice, and deer are commonly found in many urban environments. These species are highly adaptable and in many cases are becoming unwanted visitors rather than welcomed guests. As with all wildlife, cover is essential for the survival of these species. Small brush piles intended for amphibians and reptiles will also provide shelter for rabbits and mice. Chipmunks and woodchucks are adept at digging their own burrows. Trees may provide shelter for squirrels, raccoons, and opossums. From the K-State Research and Extension Wildcat District, this has been a Dave and Strantz with your K-State Research and Extension Report.
Thank you, Adavin. And now, here is Jesse Gilmore with his report.
With K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District, this is Jesse Gilmore bringing you this week's Hort Report. As we proceed into tree planting season, you might be wary of certain trees that would otherwise be perfect shade trees were it not for one fatal flaw. The prime example of this is the American elm and Dutch elm disease, which is a terminal fungal wilt that can wipe out any susceptible elms in the area. Most elms currently in southeast Kansas landscapes were planted before DED resistance was bred into nursery stock, so Dutch elm disease is currently a major problem that might have you looking to other species for shade. However, multiple cultivars of elms now have DED resistance, which makes it more likely that your tree will survive any infection. The most common resistant varieties are Princeton and Valley Forge. Either is an excellent choice for new landscape plantings if you're in love with elms and want to make sure they survive as long as possible. One other misunderstood shade tree that has had favorable characteristics bred into it is the sweet gum. Sweet gums are arguably the perfect shade tree for southeast Kansas with no disease, insect, or structure problems to speak of. However, the one fatal flaw of sweet gums is the spiky fruits. Many people have called me asking if there's a way to keep sweet gums from fruiting, and for mature sweet gum there are, but are largely cost prohibitive. There are a couple of cultivars that have been bred to be fruitless or nearly fruitless. When planted in the landscape, you get an incredibly strong tree without all of the debris. These two cultivars are Rotunda Loba and Ward. Because sweet gums are nearly perfect trees once the fruits are removed, expect a competitive fight when going to buy these trees online. Some common shade trees have fatal flaws that still haven't been solved through breeding. Silver maples and all ashes are examples. Silver maples turn very brittle as they mature and consistently suffer from limb breakage. If you are picking out a silver maple at a nursery, it is vital that you choose one with good structure at the start and prune it regularly to ensure that the limbs are as strong as they can be. Ashes all suffer from emerald ash borer, which is an invasive pest that is slowly moving its way westward and wiping out all native ash plantings. Emerald ash borer is not currently in southeast Kansas, but will slowly make its way towards us from Springfield, which is currently as close as it has gotten. It will not currently affect ash trees if you really want them in your landscape, but it is important to plan for the future when choosing current trees. Vigorous, healthy trees with moderate tolerance to the borer, such as urbanite green ash, will have the best chance of surviving borer damage once they inevitably make their way here. There are many different cultivars of trees, which can be overwhelming to sift through if you need just one or two trees for your landscape. KSU Extension has a publication called Shade and Ornamental Trees for Kansas, which lists out the best selections for our state based on variety trials at research centers such as the Pear Horticulture Research Center in Hayesville. You can request a print form of this publication at your local Extension office. For more information on today's topic, contact your local Extension office. I can be reached at 620-724-8233 or by email at jr637@ksu.edu. Once again, this has been Jesse Gilmore bringing you this week's Hort Report.
Thank you, Jesse, and thank you for listening to K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District Ag Team on KGGF 690 Radio.